most circumstances, you can't foresee all circumstances, but in most circumstances, it requires proof of actual ownership.
John, I have a question. Does this statute, this is a small thing, but I had trouble having it make sense for me. Would it read, a person who comes into control of property of another that he knows or has good reason to know is delivered or was delivered under a mistake of fact as to the nature of the amount of property or the identity of the recipient commits theft if? Shouldn't there be a comma after recipient? Because the nature of the amount of property or the identity of the recipient applies only to cases where it's delivered
right.
under mistake,
right.
isn't
be,
it?
Should be a comma
after
recipient.
After recipient.
Right.
Right.
So there were two omitted commas. One should be after mislaid, one should be after recipient.
I can't answer.
Stephanie?
Do you have any problem with the intent statement in 3 that limits the intent, the restates, as a matter of fact, only the intent to deprive the owner? But you say a person commits theft whether with intent to deprive or to appropriate, he, da 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 da. Is that with intent to deprive really needed in 3? Haven't you already prefaced the whole thing that he had the intent either to deprive the owner or to appropriate to himself? He then latches on to some lost property and
I think she's right.
You're right. The intent's going to have to apply anyway.
Well,
the fall,
intent
yeah.
in 3 at all done.
Because number 2 says with the intent to deprive or appropriate.
Commit
the
problem,
theft. Problem. I'm sorry. I was going to say the problem with the common law cases is this. The common law will treat as larceny, you know, the finding of lost property or mislaid property or property delivered under mistake where the intent to deprive the owner accompanies the finding or the delivery, you know, the initial receipt. The cases get into trouble where the fellow finds and then thinks about it for, you know, the next day decides, gee, I'm going to keep this. And the battle always turns on whether the intent actually accompanied the act of finding. It seems that it's that time factor which you're trying to avoid, and I'm not sure if the statute does that. Under this would be a crime for the fellow to pocket it, think about it, and later decide to keep it. It would not be a crime to do that.
How about go ahead.
Let me say that under this, assuming that an individual found some lost property, and when he first found it, he had an intent to keep it and deprive the owner. If he subsequently then took steps to restore this property, reasonable steps to restore the property to the owner, he would not be guilty of theft under this draft. And, of course, what they're trying to get at and what the purpose was, Jake, as you can tell, I'm sure, is that they're trying to put this duty upon the finder to take these later acts and to make that criminal rather than the initial intent.
Then
now, maybe that's opening up the can of worms.
Then would you reverse it? Instead of say the person with intent to the crime were appropriate, fails to take reasonable measures to restore property, to which he is coming to control by means of mistake, loss, or delivery. In other words, it's his failure to take the reasonable measures rather than his coming into control that's the crime. So if you just reverse the sentence, don't you come up with that?
Do that again, Kathleen.
Well, you go back to a person commits theft when with intent to deprive or to appropriate property to himself. He fails to take reasonable measures to restore property to an owner. Over which he has come into control by means of, well, I'm having trouble with the grammar, but anyway, I want to reverse the sentence.
All right, all right. Now, are you suggesting that we keep this with intent to deprive the owner in there, notwithstanding your earlier comment?
No, I don't think it's necessary. I was reading that, going back to section 2, so we were picking it up from that preliminary statement.
Well, if the purpose of this section, the purpose of the section is to make the crime not to take reasonable steps, does it make any difference what the person's intent was in the first instance? In other words, he may come into possession of it fully intending to restore it and then got to thinking about it and said, well, I might as well keep it. Don't you want that to be a crime? Thereafter forms an intent and doesn't take these steps.
Yeah, I think so.
And the fact that he may have come into possession, say the delivery man came to the door and he wasn't too careful about saying,
yeah,
I'm sure you mean me and not somebody else.
But
it wouldn't be so much the issue. The issue is that having once done it, he then didn't clarify or make an inference directly.
But isn't what you're getting at that the failure to take the reasonable steps is indicative of the wrongful intent? And you've already said in section two that that's the thrust, is the you intended to deprive the owner. Now, this section merely spells it out by saying this is one of the ways in which you we show the intent to deprive by the failure to take reasonable steps when you come into it under these circumstances.
Would this be consistent with your suggestion, Ms. Buffet? A person commits theft if he fails to take reasonable measures to restore property to the owner thereof when he comes in to
when he fails to take
A person commits theft if he fails to take reasonable measures to restore the property to its owner when he comes in to control of...
You might need to make the initial intent.
Yeah. I think the suggestion is good, but I can't get the words.
I'm not so sure that it isn't all right the way it is.
Well, I'm not sure it isn't either, frankly. I think I don't really see what you would accomplish by just reversing the order of the...
Well, I think one of the comments was that there was the concern was not what the person's intent was on day one. The crime that you wanted to get at was the fellow who didn't take reasonable steps, regardless of perhaps of what his intent.
Well, would that be accomplished by deleting the written intent to deprive the owner thereof?
I would think so.
Unless you want the prosecutor to have to prove that he failed to take these acts or came into possession with the intent or failed to take the necessary act with the intent.
Well, wouldn't the prosecutor have to allege and prove the failure to take reasonable steps?
Yes.
That would not be an affirmative defense. That would be an essential element of the crime.
Well, yeah, and certainly it wasn't our intention to make it a theft. To do something when without an intent to deprive the owner of the property.
Well, that's what
we don't want to do in the
wrong
time.
I think
it's all right.
No, it is not a crime to search for a failure.
You mean
the owner?
Kathleen, you're not suggesting that this should be a crime even where there's no intent to deprive the owner of the property.
No,
you're not suggesting.
You've already stated in two that you're talking about that it was with the intention either to deprive the owner or to appropriate. Himself, the property.
Okay.
Your criticism is one of redundancy.
Well, or that the elimination of one of the phrases in section 3 might have changed the thrust of it.
Well,
Mr. Connell, did you have something you wanted to add?
Just have one comment. Unless you clarify your position, you're going to fall back on the common law, I'm afraid, and the prosecutor is going to be required to prove this question of intent both at the time of finding and at the time he failed to take some affirmative act.
What about if it were contained, of course, in the previous section, but the words with intent to deprive the owner were removed from this decision from section 3? Is that going to solve the problem of having to move intent?
I don't think so, because I have trouble with the person who comes into contact and control of the property of another. We know now that the intent must be formed at that time. Just foresee that unless you are specific in that area, the court's going to require the prosecution to prove both of the elements. Yeah, I think it's a good point.
Could you pass on perhaps and give somebody the job perhaps trying to write out an alternative coming back?
Don, would you, Professor Hunter?
I've got a suggestion. It's a pass on suggestion too, but the state of Washington has this same law, at least they intend to have. Might be useful to look at their statute and see how they handle it.
Let's look at the New York
155.05. Trying to get a comment here from the Model Penal Code, which is essentially where this is from, although it's also incorporated some of the New York language. But
Well, this is right off the model penal.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Word
for word?
No, it's not word for word, no.
Read it aloud.
Well, a model penal code is 223.5. A person who comes into control of property of another that he knows to have been lost, mislaid, or delivered under mistake as to the nature or amount of the property or the identity of the recipient is guilty of theft if, with purpose to deprive the owner thereof, he fails to take reasonable measures to restore the property to a person entitled to have it.
That's Caffeine's point. Is that what you intended, wasn't it, Don? Just what John has read there?
Well, Caffeine,
if so, conform with Des Connell's statement.
Well, that section would mean that the proof would have to establish the unlawful intent at the time that he fails to take the steps.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the time that he comes into possession.
Yeah.
I take it that
that's my concern.
What Dez is talking about is that.
Prove it both.
Well, the prosecution should be entitled to prove existence of intent at the time of failure to take the step.
Right.
And having done that, it is carried to prove.
Right. That's a crime regardless of confession when the delivery man brought those stuff to his door.
I think the wording in the model penal code is perhaps more specific as to what the prosecution's burden would be at that point.
Don, why don't you work on that section some more and we can act upon it.
Okay, let's go on more. I should say that our intent was to make in section 3 the intent contemporaneous with the failure to take reasonable measures.
When did you have that intent? At the time you lost it?
Before we move on, Mr. Chairman, could I just, for the benefit of some of them who haven't read this commentary, I think the Model Penal Code commentary clears this up a little bit. Says, even though a finder may take possession with intent to keep the property from the owner, he is not liable to conviction under this section if within a reasonable time he acts to restore the property to the owner. Thus, essentially, finders are punished for failure to act rather than for an initial misappropriation. Common law theory of larceny is an infringement of another's possession required a determination of the actor's state of mind at the moment of finding, for an honest state of mind at that point would preclude the felony conviction. The subsequent formation of a dishonest purpose would not be criminal, since he would already be in his possession. The search for initial fraudulent intent appears to be largely make-believe. The realistic objective in this area is not to prevent the initial appropriation, but to compel subsequent acts to restore to the owner. Therefore, the section permits conviction even where the original taking was honest in the sense that the finder then intended to restore, but subsequently changed his mind, and it bars conviction where the finder acts with reasonable promptness to restore the property, even though he may have entertained a fraudulent purpose at some time during his possession.
I think that's what we want.
Mm-hmm. And that was the purpose of this. Now, maybe we haven't accomplished that, but that's what we were trying to do.
Well, I reread, and I had the terrible feeling that might raise a terrible problem that isn't in here, because when I reread, the with intent to deprive the owner thereof fits into the clause if he fails, which would seem intent at the time of failing.
This is just
as opposed to intent at the time of finding.
Practically identical to the language in the Model Penal Code. Just there are just a couple of changes that I don't think altered at all. All right, let's go to 4. Here's a new section in the Oregon, or something that's new to the Oregon law. Theft by extortion. A person commits theft by extortion when he compels or induces another person to deliver such property to himself or to a third person by means of instilling in him a fear that if the property is not so delivered, the actor or another will in the future, one, cause physical injury to some person, or two, cause damage to property, or three, engage in other conduct constituting a crime, or four, accuse some person of a crime or cause criminal charges to be instituted against him, or five, expose a secret or publicize an asserted fact, whether true or false, tending to subject some person to hatred, contempt, or ridicule, or six, cause or continue a strike, boycott, or other collective action injurious to some person's business, except that such conduct shall not be deemed extortion when the property is demanded or received for the benefit of the group in whose interest the actor purports to act, legitimate labor action of some kind. Or seven, testify or provide information or withhold testimony or information with respect to another's legal claim or defense. Or eight, use or abuse his position as a public servant by performing some act within or related to his official duties, or by failing or refusing to perform an official duty in such manner as to affect some person adversely. Or nine, inflict any other harm that would not benefit the actor. Now, you're going to wonder why at the very beginning we use the words in the future. And this is something that we wrestled with, but if I go up to you and I pull out a gun and I say, hand over your money, it's robbery, but within this section it's pretty darn close to extortion too. And so we insert the words there in the future to draw a distinction between that act of robbery and extortion as we mean it here.
It would still be...
It still would be in the future.
But
it's
trying to make it clear.
We probably had more discussion about this particular section than
that particular phrase.
Mr. Chairman. I just like the point of discussion. John, I think this is an excellent statement, but number three sort of troubles me, and number nine a little bit. Number three, supposedly if a husband threatened his wife didn't do something, then he would go find a girlfriend to sleep with his wife. He'd be guilty of death by extortion.
Well, we're going to change that when we get to this section on it, don't we?
That's number nine.
I think you can perhaps write a more satisfactory disclaimer as far as a legitimate labor dispute in there than the one that's in there.
Six. Let me refer you to 223.4 Model Penal Code. I agree. I'm not 100% sold on this.
You get an opposition from organized labor without a clear disclaimer.
I don't think
I had this experience in drawing the anti-racketeering bill.
Six says, and I wanted to get back to Dale's point about conduct constituting a crime, but six says, cause or continue a strike, boycott, or other collective action injurious to some person's business. Now, Model Penal Code, I just stopped there. Model Penal Code that far says, bring about or continue a strike, boycott, or other collective, unofficial action. You recall, Bob, when we were discussing official and unofficial and collective and so on. Now let's go on. Our statute says, except that such conduct shall not be deemed extortion when the property is demanded or received for the benefit of the group in whose interest the actor purports to act. In other words, if you're a legitimate labor person, a legitimate union official, and you're engaging in a strike or boycott or some type of collective collective action, and you're doing this in the interest of the group that you're purporting to act, that doesn't come within the purview of this. But if you're doing it for yourself, it does.
It's pretty right. I have just the opposite concern, I think, than Bob does. But supposing that I and five other guys decide we're going to boycott some that's a group large enough, not organized, we're just going to boycott a restaurant. I'm going to keep my guy and my friend back from here anymore unless you pay or contribute to my political campaign or a political campaign. And he says, well, okay, so he is owner of this restaurant or whatever it may be, commences to contribute. So I say, okay, and I tell my friend, you can carry.
Of course, you'd ask another statute. It's the political.
Yeah, but for any
thing we were interested in, of course, was not only to protect the rights and privileges of a legitimate labor organization acting in a legitimate manner to further the means of its own members, but that there can be in our other organizations and various other fields we're getting into the consumer boycott business, for example, in some areas of cities now. The civil rights movement.
You wanted that brought in so that
we wanted it brought enough so that we couldn't claim that I and he was carrying on a boycott against Portland City traction up here because he wouldn't run the bus into Albina wasn't being hauled in for theft.
Mm-hmm.
The model penal code, Bob, is a little bit less definitive, I think. It says, going on, bring about a continuous strike, boycott, or other collective unofficial action if the property is not demanded or received for the benefit of the group in whose interest the actor purports to act. Well, it's
we make the affirmative statement that you can't call it extortion.
We say, except that such conduct shall not be deemed extortion, rather than just using the word.
Again, you use the word deemed. And
yeah.
I wonder if the there's a criminal statute under the Taft-Hartley Act, and also there's the I believe it's the so-called Hobbs anti-racketeering statute, federal statute. Anti-racketeering statute has been used, for example, in these cases involving extortion by boxing managers and so forth. I wonder if there would be language or cases in those areas that would be helpful. I don't know. I make the suggestion that this might be something that I do know that there have been some criminal prosecutions under the Taft-Hartley Act where the union official has allegedly extorted monies from the president of the company, Mark. Dave Beck was one under the Krumhoff case. I wonder if those areas might be looked into.
Yeah, and they have a. We may find something
might
in
some
there.
Some drafting or some language there that would be helpful. I don't know.
I
intention was not to let Mr. Beck off, but of course, what he was asking was going for the benefit of the members of the union. Then this is presumed to be a legitimate exercise of their bargaining power.
Yeah. Well, my recollection of the Model Penal Code commentary on this area was that. That's such a ticklish area to get into, and it's so hard to control something like that they felt that it was better to leave it non-criminal, even though the demands may really be outrageous. If it's a legitimate collective bargaining between labor and management, that it's pretty difficult for the criminal law to try to control this type of thing.
What you're trying to do here is to denounce the shakedown.
Right.
Yeah.
It isn't just the labor union area that concerns me. We have a lot of group activity these days. Mm-hmm. He's not mentioned some recent.
Oh, I think we better leave us alone.
Well,
at least till after election.
Let me comment.
Primary or general?
That's the election. Let me comment on Judge Burns's observation, because the way this was originally drafted, if you look at your original draft, said collective labor group action, and it wasn't our intent to necessarily direct this toward the labor groups, and so we crossed out labor group. And here it says strike, boycott, or other collective action. We thought that if we put labor group in there, it would look to organized labor, so we were zeroing in on them, and we weren't.
Official in there for a while. What's official?
Now, Michigan says bring about or continue a strike, boycott, or other similar collective action to obtain property which is not demanded or received for the benefit of the group which the actor purports to represent. We thought we needed a more definitive disclaimer here, and that we should strike similar, because again, that modifies strike and boycott and look like we were zeroing in on labor. And so we struck that, and we did put this in. We had a lot of discussion, and I don't know whether short of taking out the Michigan Code and the Model Penal Code and the New York Code and looking at all these and looking at the previous drafts, whether we can really place it in perspective, especially to make a decision on it. But the record should show that this wants to have a broad range. Now, short of that, I don't have anything else to say about it.
It seems to me that this section has a great deal of value, and that we leave it the way it is, and then if there is a particular interest on the part of some commission member, then discuss more detailed changes at a later date. I think we're all agreement on what we want to do.
Actually, in light of the discussion that's been had on it, I'm satisfied with it. I think that our record is clear that there's no intent to take any specific measures against a labor action of any sort.
Okay,
there's
a group of students who want to sleep in.
Yeah.
But my point was that the exception that appears in there was intended to cover, make it clear that we didn't want to infringe upon legitimate collective bargaining. I think that's what.
Judge Burns' observation is a good one. We ought to let the whole act in a particular section until further study has been made of undoubtedly the decisions in other jurisdictions. Or at least statutes covering it.
Well, I think this will be delivered on it before final approval of organizations, including organized labor, and direct the intent that specific and say, what do you have to say about it? I don't see anything wrong with it, especially because you use the word deem. So perhaps some group action can be considered extortion, but quite obviously, legitimate labor movement strike wouldn't be. I don't know. It may make them nervous, but I think if they think about it a while, it's pretty good in
the
language.
The gravamen of the offense is benefit to an individual or individual.
Yeah.
By refusing to take action that might eventually benefit the group, but that particular point is the recognition that this person threatens the action. Now, that's the gravamen of the offense.
But the Cosa Nostra is a group, and they're acting for their benefit. They can do this and defend under this section the way the exception is written.
In other words, the strike might actually benefit a large group, but the actor would be immediately or be directly benefited over and beyond the team member.
I suspect that with what the sociologists call our pluralistic society, that this has an immense range of possible application, and I must say that I'm fortunate enough not to
too much more time to change.
Could we do this?
You've done that.
I have the staff in mind. I've got no particular axe grind on this, and this is a sort of a thing, being a part of a package of legislation like this. This is a sort of a thing that could hang up the whole package and maybe contribute to its defeat. But insofar as our limitations of time and space are concerned, could we leave it in and circulate it as part of the whole thing and specifically ask? I certainly think that COPE should be asked. I certainly think that AOI and the other interested groups, and letting them know this isn't final, but we solicit their views with respect to this.
Also, in that connection, I think that in this particular case, that we should accompany this with copies of the Model Penal Code, the Michigan Code, the New York, and Connecticut, and Illinois, so that they'll be aware of the fact that this isn't any singular.
You're not being singled out.
Yeah.
And the commentary from the New York, or from the Model Penal Code section of this, how would that be?
Well, John, might there not be a possibility of approaching it this way? In the commentary, put an effective language. This section is not intended to apply to each, and you can write it in with the exception. Could it be an approach?
Well, that would be. except the statutory language is the primary authority, and the commentary is secondary authority from this.
I think we need an anti-racketeering statute in Oregon. I've drafted one and offered it on a couple of occasions, but there's not too much interest on the part of the legislature. But in my experience of drafting that bill and writing exceptions to it, I would be opposed to this section as it's now written.
Well, there may not be a unanimity of opinion here, but I'll tell you one thing, fellas. We have to do something in this area before we're through. We can't just close our eyes and say we're going to forgive this type of criminal action.
I wonder if there have been reported cases decided under...
I was going to ask that, the other states.
Under the other revisions, I would suspect that under... New York or some of the earlier revisions are maybe, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Has Don had the benefit of the drafts?
I'm in agreement with this, frankly, regardless of my facetious remark a little while ago, but I do think we ought to make proceed with all deliberate speed on this. Let's see what we're doing.
Well, Don, would you look into these facets of this thing? One.
I'll be happy to dig out for this, Don, if you'll call me next week. I'll dig out the bill and what I had an explanatory statement to attach to it also. I think I can find it.
The one, the Attorney General's drafts, and also the experience of these other states.
The House side, as I recall, Senator.
Oh, wow. It explains it all.
What is the desire of the committee with respect to a lunch break? I suppose we should probably take one. Don is kind of worn out here. He's had the flu for a few days.
I think we can get through the whole thing this afternoon.
Yes.
Why don't we take it now? Mildred has been working.
Is that the nature of most?
Yeah. Now, what time shall we reconvene? Shouldn't an hour be enough?
Yeah.
1:15.
Okay. There's no question it is, but there's nothing sacrosanct about the hearsay rule. The courts are modifying the hearsay rule from time to time. Now,